Chapter 12. Anakin is having a dream of his mother cooking by the porcelain stove, when Qui-Gon wakes him with a hand on his shoulder and a gentle shake, saying, "Wake up, Anakin. It's time for breakfast." It takes effort not to accidentally call him Mom, but Anakin manages it, rubbing the dream from his eyes and then looking up. He could still smell the dream, a warm, soft cooking smell, barely noticeable past the water and plants, but still there. It's so familiar and homely that it almost brings tears to his eyes, realizing how much he misses the cramped little kitchen in their house, and how he will probably never see it again. Qui-Gon squeezes his shoulder, and Anakin quickly gets up, mumbling, "I'm awake, sorry, I'm up." "Good morning, Anakin," Qui-Gon says with a smile, and steps back to give him room to rise. "Did you sleep well?"
"Not really, aside from the last bit."
Anakin can't remember when he'd actually fallen asleep, just that it had taken a long time. But he slept much worse in the past, so...
"I guess," Anakin offers, rubbing at his eyes. "Could have slept some more."
"Perhaps a nap later," Qui-Gon muses. "We will likely be at loose ends today as well while Obi-Wan goes about his work." There's a strange tone to his voice, like he's hesitating. And Anakin looks up, wary. Qui-Gon meets his eyes and then sighs ruefully.
"Anakin, I owe you an apology," the Jedi admits, and sits down beside him on the bed. "I have not been handling your care very well. I didn't realize you only had one set of clothing. I'm sorry. I should have gotten you warmer things to wear at the Jedi Temple. And I should have seen to your health examination first thing, before anything else."
Anakin frowns a little, pushing the blankets off him.
"That's okay, Master Qui-Gon," he says awkwardly. "I should have said something. You didn't know."
Qui-Gon nods slowly and then looks away.
"I should have asked," he says, and shakes his head. "I assumed things where I had no reason to, and you suffered unduly from my inaction."
Anakin feels a creeping chill at that, though he can't quite tell why. Qui-Gon apologizing just seems not right.
"No, it's not your fault. I didn't say anything. You didn't know. It's my fault."
"Anakin, no," Qui-Gon says, lifting a hand to stall him, offering him a smile that's more awkward than soothing. "It's not your job to tell me these things. I should have known better. You are under my charge, and I have not been taking adequate care of you. I'm sorry. I will try to do better in the future."
Anakin squirms, really uncomfortable with the whole thing, especially what Kenobi Obi-Wan had said about not asking for things. Anakin hadn't said anything, so Qui-Gon hadn't known anything was wrong. And the idea that Qui-Gon was taking the blame for something Anakin didn't do, it's just...
"I could have said something," Anakin mutters, not sure what else to say.
"And it wasn't that bad. I wasn't that uncomfortable. A little cold. I've been cold before. It's fine."
Qui-Gon looks at him and then hums.
"Are you uncomfortable now?" he asks then. "Is there anything you need?"
"A little, with this whole conversation."
"No, I'm fine," Anakin says quickly. "I guess I need to use the fresher?"
That makes Qui-Gon smile and ruffle his hair.
"In that case," he says, and stands up. "Be quick. Our host has made us pancakes. You won't want to let them get cold."
Anakin bounces off the bed and hurries away, before any more awkward stuff could be said. By the time he comes out of the fresher,
Qui-Gon has headed to the kitchen, where Kenobi is standing by the stove with a plate in one hand and a spatula in the other. And on the plate, there's a pile of pancakes. "The third shelf there," Kenobi is saying. "Somewhere there should be some kind of jam." "I got it," Qui-Gon says, and comes away with two clear plastic containers. "This should do fine. Come, Anakin, sit down." Kenobi glances at him over his shoulder and offers Anakin a brief nod. "Morning," he says, and then turns back to the frying pan, easing the pancakes on it off with a spatula. "And that's the last one," he says, the stove turning itself off as he turns to the table. Anakin hops to sit, eagerly peering at the pancakes. They don't look anything like how his mother made them. These are golden brown, and don't have that icy hue that came from using blue milk. They don't smell exactly the same, too, but yeah, this is what he smelled in his dream. "Go ahead," Kenobi says while moving to get glasses. "Take one, take a few. There should be enough for all of us."
"Thank you, I will,"
Anakin says eagerly, before quickly counting how many there are and taking two. Across from him, Qui-Gon takes one, and Kenobi joins them with glasses and a pitcher of crystal clear water, sitting down as well. Anakin is the first to bite into a pancake and has to take a moment to figure out how he likes it. It doesn't taste anything like pancakes back home. These are so soft that he can barely even feel them on his tongue. No grit or crunch at all. Weird, but really sweet. "Do you have duties today?" Qui-Gon asks, while smearing some yellow stuff on his pancakes. "Nothing on the schedule yet, but I figure it's time I start looking for assignments," Kenobi says, rolling his pancake up. "Since you're here for observation and all, I might as well do actual work for you guys to observe." "We're leaving the greenhouse?" Anakin asks, disappointed. He really wanted to see the ring with the forest inside it. "Not yet. I need to actually get an assignment, and then probably restock on whatever I need for it," Kenobi admits, waving his fork in a sort of dismissive gesture. "I only got what I needed for everyday work and living so far. Might take another day." "So we can still look around the greenhouse?" Kenobi takes a bite of his pancake, thinking about it. "How about I get Anakin a minder for the day?" he says. "And you," he points his fork at Qui-Gon, "can go do an observation on the lecture circuit." "I'm sorry," Qui-Gon asks, looking taken aback, while Anakin looks up with alarm. "There are always classes going on in the greenhouse, and you need to see one firsthand. Hey, MD2, can you get me a data pad, please?" Kenobi calls to the droid, who'd just been bobbing down the hallway outside the kitchen. "One hooked into the station systems. I want to check the lecture circuit schedule." Anakin looks at Qui-Gon, then at Kenobi, feeling a pit in his stomach. "What do you mean, a minder?"
"An adept who can show you around and answer all your questions," Kenobi says, "just so you don't get lost while Qui-Gon's busy elsewhere."
"Oh," Anakin says, unsure. "I don't want to be a bother."
"Oh, trust me, there are adepts who would consider it a treat. A bit of a break from all the studying is always welcome around here. Plus, it's good training for the adepts," Kenobi says, and looks up as MD2 floats into the kitchen, holding a data pad in its grippers. He accepts it with a nod, and then sets it down.
"Let's see what's on the roster." Anakin and Qui-Gon exchange mostly confused looks, while Kenobi eats with one hand and pokes at the screen with the other.
"Oh, excellent. Master Krilla is doing her communication seminar in 2 hours. That's perfect. I'm going to put you on that, Qui-Gon. Should be very educational for you."
"Do I get a say in this?" Qui-Gon asks, though he sounds more amused than bothered.
"Nope," Kenobi says, with a sort of brutal cheerfulness. "It's 3 hours long. Do you have a data pad to take with you?" Why, do you expect me to take notes?
Yeah, and I'm going to check them later, so pay attention, Kenobi says, and then looks at Anakin.
Do you want to just tour around the greenhouse some more, or would you like to see a lecture too?
Anakin shifts on his seat, unsure.
I could go to the one Qui-Gon is going to?
It's going to be pretty dry and boring for you, Kenobi says, and checks the listing.
Here's one you might be interested in. Specialist Mreth is holding a lecture on desertification. It's mostly about what happened to planets like Korriban, Jakku, Tatooine.
Anakin almost bounces to his feet.
Really? About Tatooine?
Kenobi arches his brows a little at that. Well, planets like it, he says, and turns the data pad around, tapping the lecture listing to bring up more information. There's a lot of desert planets out there, and Specialist Mreth is one of our leading experts on planetary desertification. Anakin leans in to read eagerly, while across from him, Qui-Gon gives Kenobi a thoughtful look. Kenobi shrugs and cuts another piece of pancake.
So, a lesson about communication, Qui-Gon muses.
I'd put you on one about teaching methods, but there's none on the schedule, Kenobi says. But I can get you some study material from the archives if you want. Do you prefer holos or texts?
Both,
Qui-Gon says determinedly.
I will do both.
Anakin glances up to see Kenobi actually smiling at Qui-Gon for that. And though it isn't a particularly fond smile, it's still a surprise.
Kenobi doesn't smile a lot.
Good, the agriculturalist says, and looks at Anakin. So, how about it? Do you want to see Mreth's lecture?
Yeah, I do, Anakin says, lifting his head and blowing out a breath.
The text explained what the lecture was about, and it was a lot of scientific language, a lot of history.
I didn't know people studied planets like Tatooine, he admits.
Kenobi hums in agreement.
There are a lot of planets that have a chance of becoming desert planets out there, he explains. It's way easier to make a desert world accidentally than a lot of people realize. It's something Jedi agriculturalists actively combat whenever we can. Because once a desertification gets to a certain point, it's really hard to stop.
Anakin frowns a little at that, wondering.
Was Tatooine once... It wasn't always a desert world?
Kenobi searches for something on the datapad, and then hums.
No, it wasn't, he says, almost apologetically.
You'll probably hear all about it in the lecture, but it was probably a runaway climate change caused by industry. Mixture of loss of local flora and increase of various gases in the atmosphere. Tatooine probably had a big desert even before, and once the climate shifted, it just started growing.
Anakin looks down, sticking a bit of pancake into his mouth.
He can't imagine it. But at the same time, he can. On Tatooine, the sand is always moving, always shifting, always swallowing this or that settlement. The Dune Sea creeps forward more every year, and once rock has been whittled down by the winds... Imagining the Dune Vortex blowing over Naboo and just covering all the plants and houses and grasses with sand, it's pretty horrible.
People made it happen? Anakin asks quietly.
On Tatooine, it was mostly carelessness. People didn't care about the damage they were doing, and eventually, Kenobi shrugs. It's not always like that. Sometimes it's overzealous farming. Sometimes it's a natural disaster.
Asteroid impact, local star moving to a new sequence, a stray stellar object throwing the local orbits askew. There are a lot of ways to mess up a planet, but usually it's industry and messed up agriculture. People are a lot more common than, say, wandering stars. A bit of a heavy discussion for breakfast, Qui-Gon comments.
The exact same time, Anakin asks eagerly, wandering stars? There are stars that wander?
The rest of the breakfast is spent talking about what kind of havoc a star passing through another star's system might cause, and what it might do to the orbits of the planets in that system. Kenobi tells them about a system that was sent into a death spiral by a passing brown dwarf, which eventually sent a gas giant into their local star and caused it to go into supernova. It's not exactly comforting learning that stuff like that can just happen, but it's definitely interesting.
You'll hear about it in the lecture, Kenobi says, while getting both Anakin and Qui-Gon datapads. Your schedules, gentlemen?
Anakin, do you still want to look around the greenhouse? You have some time before the lecture and after.
Yes, please, Anakin nods eagerly.
I'll get you a guide then, Kenobi agrees with a nod, and looks at Qui-Gon. Anything to say? To add? Qui-Gon hums, looking at the data pad and then glancing at Anakin.
I dare say we're all set for the day. How about you, Anakin?
Yeah, Anakin says, fiddling with the data pad.
It's a lot all of a sudden, but not more than he can handle. The whole stuff with the Naboo was worse, and at least there's no war here.
He has a data pad and would have a guide, and there'd be a lesson about desert worlds. He'd be fine.
Yeah. What about later, after the lessons and the tour and everything?
We'll meet up after and have lunch, Qui-Gon promises, putting a hand on his shoulder.
And see about the rest of the day together.
I might have an assignment by then. Who knows? Kenobi muses, looking between them and rocking back and forth on the balls of his feet before stepping back.
He's still a little awkward, but definitely not as much as before.
And when he smiles, it actually looks nice.
But I guess we'll see. We'll meet up for lunch then.
Good luck on your lessons.
Take notes. I'll be quizzing you later.
Anakin shares a look with Qui-Gon and then grins.
Qui-Gon smiles and squeezes Anakin's shoulder.
We'll be looking forward to it.
Anakin forgets all about being nervous during the day because there are so many more interesting things to concentrate on than his nerves. Every time they rear their head and he starts to worry about Qui-Gon leaving or what would happen to him after, would he be Qui-Gon's Padawan or what? Well, there's something else there to distract him.
First, the Forest Ring, or the Circle of 100 Biospheres, as it's officially called.
It has the most commonly seen biospheres of the galaxy, from icy tundras to desert plains, and just about everything in between. The forest parts are the most noticeable ones, but there are more than one of them, so many more. Everything from pine forests to marshes to rainforests.
These are mostly the galaxy's more endangered plants. Anakin's minder, Adept Laya, explains, while showing Anakin around the winding rocky paths amidst the forest. If it wasn't for the fact that he can see the arching glass ceiling high above and space beyond it, he would have thought he was in an actual forest, like on Naboo, with ground under his feet. It feels like real ground. Adept Laya explains how the greenhouse breeds and preserves a lot of endangered plants as part of maintaining the galaxy's largest seed vaults, which Anakin has never even heard of. They become shortly one of his most favorite things,
the colossal asteroid stations hidden among the stars, where the Jedi AgriCorps have, for centuries, been collecting the seeds, nuts, and other reproductive materials of plant life all over the galaxy. "Have you ever had to use them, the seed vaults?" Anakin asks, amazed. "Oh, several times. They're constantly in use," Adept Laya says, with a sad sort of smile. "Species go extinct all the time, all over the galaxy. And new species are born every day. We can't keep up with them all, but every now and then we can bring the ones we thought lost back. The latest was Lirksu, a very culturally important flower of Shirkin. It was lost due to infection that nearly wiped out the whole plant genus out on Shirkin. We managed to revive the 14 different variants of the Lirksu in sufficient numbers for its continual survival just this week." "Wait, this week?" Laya nods proudly. "It was announced just the other day. A friend of mine was part of the propagation efforts." Laya is specializing in species preservation and knows a lot about endangered plants and fungi, and even animals. Domestic animals are part of the AgriCorps sphere of influence, apparently, though less so than plants. Anakin ends up almost late for his desertification lesson, listening to her tell him about all the plants AgriCorps had preserved, and also the research they were doing, developing new medicine from known plants. Then, the lesson on desertification. It takes place in a big, bowl-shaped room. Auditorium, Laya calls it. And it's full of people. Some of them are young like him. Others are much older. And Anakin can tell, not all of them are former Jedi initiates. There are adults there who feel quiet in the Force in a way Anakin's come to realize non-sensitive people generally are. They all have data pads or flimsies with them. One of them even has an actual notebook made of paper. The teacher isn't there, but they're all already very serious and concentrated. No one pays Anakin any mind as Laya shows him to a seat near the front, whispering, "I'll come get you when your lesson is done, all right?" "All right. Thank you, Adept Laya," Anakin whispers back. "Thank you for showing me around." "It was my pleasure," Laya says with a smile, and then leaves him to it. The teacher comes in not much after that, followed by a floating container full of what Anakin can already tell is sand. The teacher is of a species Anakin has never seen before, their body covered in sandy-colored overlapping scales, their eyes barely visible through the plates. Even without knowing what kind of species they come from, Anakin can sort of tell their species probably comes from a desert world. "Welcome," the teacher says, in a voice that sounds like rocks grinding together. "To a beginner course on planetary desertification. In this lesson, I will cover the 10 most common causes of total planetary desertification. The signs of early desertification. The most common effects and consequences of desertification. And then the means to combat desertification. And finally, the methods of, undesertify a planet. We will cover all of these subjects at more length in future lessons. Everyone be quiet. We will begin with Jakku." Anakin leans in eagerly as the teacher activates a hologram projector, bringing forth the three-dimensional picture of a planet that fills nearly the whole room, hovering above all the listening students.
"Jakku,"
the teacher begins, the voice echoing in the auditorium like a growling Tusken in a canyon.
"Once a verdant world known for its marshes and rainforests was desertified due to a calamity. 2,405 years ago, an asteroid struck the northern hemisphere, causing an immense devastation to the planet, and subsequently knocking it into a new orbit around the local star.
Anakin has 2 pages of notes and a mind that's spinning with new information by the time the lesson ends. And he hasn't budged from his seat even for a moment, despite the fact that there'd been 2 breaks. By the time Laia comes for him, he is hungry and thirsty and feeling vaguely bitter about Tatooine. There had been 5 desert worlds in the inner core of the galaxy, which had been fixed from desertification. It had been a process that took centuries, millions of hours of work from thousands and thousands of people, and more money than Anakin can wrap his mind around. But they'd been fixed. They now house big populations with a lot of plants and a lot of water. Tatooine isn't any worse off than those planets were, but no one would ever put that much money or effort into fixing Tatooine. "Did you learn anything new?" Laia asks interestedly. "Yeah," Anakin sighs. "Desertification sucks." Laia gives him another small tour, in a biosphere not set on any of the rings, but near the very center of the station, where different aquatic biospheres are simulated in tanks bigger than the entirety of Mos Espa. Anakin peers into their dark depths, watching Natolin and Mon Cala minders tending to various underwater crops, and it's really, really amazing. But his heart's not in it. He can't get the image from his head now. That map of Tatooine, how they thought it might have looked before the desertification. It had oceans. Tatooine had oceans once, and lakes and rivers. The Dune Sea was once an ocean, and Beggar's Canyon had been made by a river thousands and thousands and thousands of years ago. And now it's all sand and rock and dry death. Because 5,000 years ago, people got rid of all the plants and let the climate go haywire.
"I can tell that your lesson was not very uplifting," Qui-Gon says with a worried kind of amusement when Laia delivers Anakin to Kenobi's ship. Anakin sighs.
"Desertification sucks," he says emphatically. Qui-Gon chuckles at that and pats his back consolingly.
"It does, but people here work hard to prevent it from affecting more worlds," he says, before thanking Laia for her service and sending her away. "Now come, Obi-Wan is back and he has an assignment."
"We're leaving?" Anakin asks, climbing onto the cargo lift.
"Seems so,"
Qui-Gon agrees, and activates the lift. Anakin looks up, and even before the cargo hatch closes, he can see there's new stuff in the cargo bay. Lots of new stuff, marked with the greenhouse's symbol and with long manifests. Seeds and fertilizers and laboratory equipment and tents? There are boxes there, too, in the cargo bay, in the corridor, and in the kitchen, where they find Kenobi himself, sorting out food containers into shelves. Kenobi glances back at them.
"How was your lesson, Anakin?" he asks interestedly. "Did you enjoy it?"
Anakin sighs. "Kinda. I learned a bunch of stuff. And Tatooine is apparently crift."
Kenobi offers him a slight smile at that, slightly apologetic. "Yeah, it rather is. Unless someone really rich starts pouring a lot of money into it," he admits, and turns back to the shelf. "If you'd like, I can show you some of the theses done on Tatooine and its hypothetical restoration. It's one of the oldest desert worlds, so there's a lot that's been written about it."
What, like people imagining how to fix it? Anakin asks, and makes a face, while Qui-Gon goes to pick up another box of foodstuff for Kenobi to begin sorting. I think that would just make me sadder. Kenobi laughs at that.
Yeah, probably. Well, here's something to distract you, if nothing else. We're heading out tonight. I have an assignment, he says. It probably won't be very exciting, but you'll get dirt on your boots.
Anakin says, glancing at Qui-Gon uncertainly.
I guess that's good? It's a spacer saying. Getting some actual experience in the field, specifically on a planet.
Qui-Gon explains with a smile and looks at Kenobi.
What is the assignment?
Kenobi hums.
Planet Aharse in the Mesbeth system? Anawat sector, he explains. They've got a plague in one of their stable food crops, and I'm going to go try to fix it.
That's not close, Anakin says, frowning. Though the planet and system are completely new to him, he knows where the Anawat sector is anyway.
It's in the western reaches, right?
Yeah, it's almost a week just to make it there on the Verdant, Kenobi agrees and glances at them. And crop disease won't have an easy fix. It's going to be a long one.
Qui-Gon hums.
In that case, I suppose we should load our data pads on lessons while we're here, shouldn't we?
He muses.
But if it takes long, won't the Jedi Council mind? Anakin asks worriedly, confusedly.
No one had said how long this would take. But this sounds like something that would take weeks, maybe months.
I'm already too old. What if we take too long?
Kenobi stops shelving things at that and looks at him, and even Qui-Gon hesitates.
Well,
Qui-Gon says, and frowns.
Kenobi says. And turns to face Anakin, who's squeezing his data pad nervously, looking between them.
I actually had an idea, Kenobi says, and scratches the back of his head. Given that the educational situation here is fucking awkward, and you're going to be underfoot anyway for an undetermined amount of time, he says eloquently, I am thinking... I'm going to just go ahead and treat both of you as adept tagalongs.
Anakin blinks at that, and then tilts his head, while Qui-Gon frowns.
What would that entail, exactly?
Qui-Gon asks.
I'll treat you the same way I treat an Agricor adept learning and working under me, Kenobi says, and folds his arms, looking between them. Which means I will boss you around and try and teach you the stuff I think you need to know for your specializations. Which, in your situation, aren't actually a thing, but you get the idea.
Qui-Gon hums. I mean, in your case, I was going to do it anyway, just because.
Kenobi mutters, giving him a sidelong look.
But I guess it wouldn't hurt Anakin to learn how agriculturalists handle the Force. Good work as a sort of prequel to temple training, if you end up going that way. And who says you can't teach the kid while you're both here, Qui-Gon?
There is that, Qui-Gon muses.
Anakin says, his eyes a little wide. Would the Council let you do that?
Likely not, Qui-Gon admits ruefully.
Hell, I don't see them here, Kenobi snorts. Do you?